What is up, crime crew? Welcome back to Murder Unscripted, episode 53, to be exact, the most immersive podcast on the internet today. I'm your host, Ed Hydock, along with my bestie, Melissa Spivey.
Heyo!
So, Melissa, the time has come to wrap up our Podcaster Killed the Radio Star block. And what better way to close things out than with a conversation with some podcasters who have risen to, dare I say, true crime podcast stardom in just a very short time. So they began in 2022 and have just released their 151st episode, which not terribly far off from us, just 100 more.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and that episode was hilarious, by the way. It was about Kai, the hatchet wielding transient.
Yes.
Laughing my ass off.
I was dying. And you're absolutely right. These two have quickly become my favorite podcast other than ours, of course.
Well, duh.
And to our listeners who have been following along this month, we've been dropping a new clue every week about their identities. So I'm very excited that we finally get to make the big reveal.
Agreed. I can't believe no one guessed. We were doing like a little contest, giving some clues. And your clues were so easy, like if we're being honest.
Well, to be fair, they were easy for you because like you knew who was coming on.
You know, a fair point. Good point. Well, I'm excited too. So let's get right into it. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Murder Unscripted the hosts of People Are the Worst, Rachel Kassinger and Rebecca Blackstock.
Hi.
Stardom.
My God.
Teased it right.
I don't know about that.
I know.
I will take it. Yeah.
For sure.
Oh my gosh. Thank you guys so much for being here. We really, really
appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank y'all so much for having us.
Yeah, we're so excited.
Well, the reason we thought it would be cool to have you guys on is to talk about the podcasting journey, because we don't get into it a lot. Like, we tell these hour-long true crime stories, but we've never had like an episode dedicated to the kind of trials and tribulations that go along with doing this every week. So before we dig into that, though, give us your origin story. Like, you guys are from Alabama, right?
Yes, we are. We are from Birmingham, Alabama. We grew up, we have two older sisters. We grew up in a small little suburb outside of Birmingham. And yeah,
we're identical twins.
We grew up, our mom was very into true crime. Mm-hmm. And so we grew up, you know, she told us to get out of the room when OJ's Bronco was being chased. And we were like, no, what's going on?
No, this is hilarious. He's going so slow.
And we're, you know, she was into, we remember JonBenet Ramsey being on the screen and she'd shoo us away, but she really wanted to watch it, you know.
Yeah.
So we just grew up around it. And then in high school, unfortunately, a classmate of ours, Natalie Holloway, went missing in Aruba. Mm-hmm. And that, we've always been into true crime, but that really, having a personal connection to it, really, you know, escalated it.
Yeah. Classmate, as in she was the grade older than us, though.
Yeah, she wasn't
in our class. But seeing it up close and personal and like the behind the scenes of media being everywhere, it was just fascinating. It just furthered our fascination, I think. And so we fast forward to 2022, we're talking about, we had been on guest on some podcast and someone was like, y'all should start your own podcast. And it was so out of left field that we were like, but if we did, it would be true crime, because that's what we do. We call each other and like, did you watch Dateline last night? Did you, whatever, let's talk about this case. And we just kept finding ourselves going back to that. And we've always been like early adopter true crime podcast listeners from My Favorite Murder episode one, like always loved true crime podcasts. As more and more started coming into the space, though, we found ourselves like always rewriting how they told the story. Like, we would call and be like, I just listened to this fascinating case. I can't even remember, insert whatever podcast. They told it in the worst order. Like, mm-hmm. they should have done this. And we just kept, so we're like,
give it away too early. And I'm like,
yeah, they would give away the end too early.
Such an opportunity to like tell it in a different way. And
it breaks my heart when I hear those, because I come from this true crime factory where it's, there's a way you write. Like, you've seen that there's a billion shows out there, and there's a mm-hmm. way they're all told. Like, you reveal certain things at certain times. So when I hear it out of order, it makes my skin crawl.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's yes. Or in a way, yeah, where there's opportunity for like the biggest bomb drop ever. Mm-hmm. And they tell it right
and they
up
don't.
Front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They yeah. just tell it, they're like, ugh. I remember the case too. It just kills me. I was like, they told that terribly. And so we just kept going back to that, and we're like, let's just start one. Like, mm-hmm. what? We buy a mic, and so what? If it fails, yeah. it fails.
There's something very important that happens before you start this podcast. I want to hear about twinks. Like, this is, so you didn't just jump in to start. Yeah, there was a step before this.
The moment Rachel said, we've been on other podcasts before, I'm like, they're going to ask why we were on other podcasts. Because true. We started in 2000, well, we came up with the idea in 2016 to start a bra, or to create a bra that is invisible under clothes. Pet peeve is
right. And your kids it's hard, right?
And Spanx is doing so well.
Yeah, congratulations.
But the bra lines are so annoying to us. So that was our first company idea, and we spent 4 years designing, creating. We have no design background. We did 4 years of trials and tribulations, and so that got us on a few like entrepreneurial podcasts, whatever. And so that we did play with the idea. I'm like, should we talk about the bullshit that comes with starting a company? And then we're like, that's pretty boring. We launched a bra and ended up being March 17th, 2020, day one of lockdown, when everyone took off their bras.
No longer needed.
No longer needed.
We're like, that's okay. It's only going to be 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We're still going to launch. And whatever. I mean, it was fine, but it just did not work out. But mm-hmm. this started taking off too. And so we just shifted our focus. Rick, let's donate inventory and bye bye, twinks.
Yep.
Totally.
See you never.
When you did finally then transition over to starting your podcast, what were your expectations? Because, like you said, we'll go to Best Buy, buy a microphone, and see what happens. Was it supposed to be a fun little hobby that kind of morphed into what it is today?
That's always been the hope, obviously. We were getting very much twinks fatigue, entrepreneur fatigue, and we wanted a creative outlet. And I was like, if we get 100 downloads a month, it'll just be a fun hobby. This costs mm-hmm. us no more than $100. So yeah. Whatever.
We're good.
Rach mm-hmm. took one nap time, like her kids were napping, and she was like, I'm going to use this time to see what TikTok's about. And she did it on the Madeline McCann, that woman, and Rach, remind me, where was she?
Julia Went, or Wendell, yes. who thought she was Madeline McCann. But she did a DNA test, and she's like Austrian. And I can't remember the ins and outs now, but I was like, oh my God, I'm in a rabbit hole on this. So I did a TikTok on it, and I spent that whole damn nap time, and I was pissed. I was like, what a waste of a nap time. And then I like put my phone down, like tending my kids, and looked, and it was like 1 million views. And then it was like 10 million, 12 million. And I was like, oh.
And then someone texted us and was like, Bobby Bones just played y'all's TikTok on his podcast. And like, we listened to it. And then your TikTok followers are now 60,000, 120,000.
Wow. Yeah. That's what started it.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Almost a year in at that point. And we were getting, couple hundred. Someone posted about us on Reddit, and like I remember being like, we just got 1400 downloads from that. I was like, in a month? I was like, yeah. Like mm-hmm. I love looking back at that stuff. Yeah.
It's funny. We struggle. We came out of the gate right on YouTube. So we don't do as well in the audio only version. Like, our numbers aren't great compared to our YouTube numbers, which is wild.
That's insane. Oh, yeah. Because vice versa. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our YouTube.
We're trying to get on you. We're trying to get really? In. Good on YouTube.
Y'all did it smart. That's the way to do it. Yeah.
Just something that was like, I have such a TV brain, and Melissa has to reel me in all the time, because the way I tell stories is so different than podcasting. And it's like, I worry mm-hmm. about every frame of video. Like, it's a show that's going to be on A&E. I'm sitting there trying to like, she's like, just put it up. Who cares? It's a.
I'm
trying to make this like ready for Sundance film.
I get that.
I get that.
there's such a difference between the podcasting and the TV, and like it's so much different to write for. And like, speaking of writing, you guys, I mean, you already kind of touched on your connection to Natalie Holloway, but you guys did an incredible and super in-depth multi-part dive on her case. How was that to write? Like, knowing, because we write these cases and we don't have necessarily a connection to anyone. Like, how intense was that to write about someone, such a prolific case, first of all, but also someone like you had a connection to?
Emotional, for sure.
Yeah, it was.
And then there are...
And it took a long time because I second guessed like everything and just revisiting so much. There's so much that I was like, I know I knew this at one point, but I would have totally forgotten.
Yeah. And then there'd be like people wanting to hear personal stories about her. And I'm like, oh yeah, I know what I'm going to tell. And then I'm like, wait, I'm going to text her brother, make sure this is okay. Or like little things that like came out in the news, like very early on that I had a recovered memory about. I'm like, let me text her brother and make sure that they... Anything
that's
that,
true. There was a lot of rumors.
There was a lot.
So I was like, yeah. I remember hearing about this thing.
Her brother or her like best friends. Like, do y'all want this told or do you not? Like, what's? We had to like really dig
crazy.
Back. It was crazy. Well, it's 20 years ago almost. So
wow,
it's crazy.
That's still one of the most prolific, I think, cases out there. I mean, that's up there. It's risen to such a level. You say Natalie Holloway, and people just know what it is now.
Yeah, which is so crazy.
Wild,
yeah, it is. Still.
Wow. Well, can I ask you, so while we're talking about personal connections, and we can cut this out if you don't want to go there, but this is just something that I want to know. So you mentioned how much your mom loved true crime, and that's kind of what got you into it. And not to bring up a sore subject, but she passed away in what, 2020?
October 2020, yeah.
2020. So how did that affect you? Because she was your motivation for exploring true crime. And that would have happened a couple years before you started your podcast. So how did her death, obviously it impacted you personally. Like, that's not what the answer I'm after. I'm just curious how her death affected your journey to start a true crime podcast.
Oh, that's such a nice question.
I know. I'm like, oh,
sorry. I caught you off guard. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. No, I love it. I'd say, after she died, because it was so sudden, it was a heart attack, not COVID. I just feel like people assume it's COVID.
Yeah.
But it was so sudden that I feel like after that, there really was a kind of like, just do it mentality. Like, biggest fear is public speaking. I can't hide it. Everyone gets nervous public speaking. I know that. But I cannot hide it. Like shaking, like it makes the entire audience uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But she died, and we were like, we need to do a eulogy. And all the sisters were like, I cannot get up there. No way. My dad was like, no way. I'm not. I was like, oh, I'll do it. And I like rocked it. Just really? Nothing seems why like, you, why not?
Why were you so apt to knowing that? Was it just because of how much you loved your mom? You're like, this is what I can do for her now.
Yeah, well, that, because I did, there was one element where I like just kind of felt bad for her because it was 2020. We couldn't have a big funeral. We had a graveside thing.
And
with,
she
like,
would have loved a big ass funeral.
A procession, all of it.
And with her picture on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she's trying.
Yeah. Yes. So there was like an element that I was like, I just kind of feel bad for how it's going, how we have to send her off. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, it just, like public speaking compared to someone you've obviously known and are very close to your whole entire life, dying. I was like, it's just not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Who cares? Just do it. And then, you know, like same with the podcast, right? We'll just do it. Who cares?
Good
like
for
the,
you.
The fear of failing goes away.
Yeah. It really gives a shit. There's just more important. It puts things in perspective. There's just more, who cares? Just do it. It also made it more comfortable to randomly bring up like whatever tragic case. That's what our mom used to do. Like, did you hear about a nice family dinner? Uh-huh. Did y'all hear about the kid or the whatever? And we're like,
just to break the silence, bummer. You're like, oh God, mom.
No, I'm like, now we're the biggest bummers.
I know.
Right. Did y'all hear what happened at Carol Reed?
So funny. It's funny you talk about like poor taste sometimes, and it's because this is something that we deal with, and it's I think it's a lot of the fact that we don't get a lot of praise, where people are quick to say, hey, this sucks or this does, you know what I mean?
So like, yeah.
You guys definitely toe the line on your podcast between like humor, and then you still have to maintain a level of decorum and respect. So I'm wondering how you guys deal with this, because you do get a ton of praise, but I'm sure there's this little faction of people that are like, I don't like their banter, I don't like their tone, I don't like this. So like, how often do you hear stuff like that, and how do you deal with it when you do?
We hear it every once in a while. It's not never. It is less than I thought. Mm-hmm. Probably because, and we don't really put it out there in the beginning anyway, but if you've listened to one episode, you hear kind of how we talk to each other. If we're bantering or laughing about something, it's not about the victim. It's not about the victim's family.
It's always about the perp. It is
always. Yes. Or like something silly the police did or something, you know.
Yes.
And so people are very sensitive to it, but I'm like, I don't know how to answer.
I know. There are some, I wish I could respond on Apple's reviews, because there are some where I feel I was misreviewed. Where we got one the other day where it was like, are you really shaming someone? It was about Brian Schaefer's case and his best friend went to take a polygraph. And it was like, did you really shame someone for not taking a polygraph? That's what, you should never take a polygraph. You should always lawyer up. He did the right thing. Shame on you.
And we're like, we always do that. What?
I went back to my document and I was like, all I did is I stated he did not take a polygraph and he was ridiculed in the media for it. You can't read one article without knowing that his best friend who was with him refused to take one. You cannot get through one article. All I said is he was ridiculed. And then I said, but that's his right. So whatever.
And so exactly.
So that seems like pretty. I'm like, I don't know how to handle it because everything's so anonymous behind the computer. I don't know who that was, but I'm like, hey, I want to correct that. I wouldn't take a polygraph. No. Right.
I think that's what's happening with us is that we don't have enough like listeners on the audio side yet, because I feel like people don't know us yet. Like, or know our personalities, like, and have listened to enough episodes. We definitely have a core following, but like the broader audience sees us on YouTube and they see us open the show laughing and talking about something completely unrelated. It's like, how can you laugh at a time like this?
Yeah.
Like,
we get that a lot.
I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but so doing this day in and day out, true crime, like you have to find humor through grief. If you think about this stuff all the time, you'll cry. I mean, it's so sad. And 99.9% of true crime producers, we joke behind the scenes. I mean, that's just how you get through your day because it's your job, you know? So do you guys find that to be true?
Yes, I do. I think it's a really heavy topic. And if you can find a little humor in someone involved that's not the victim, mm-hmm. why not?
Right.
Right. We've never once had someone we've talked about themselves, if it's a survivor story or a family member, get on to us about that, about like having a personality and talking as we normally would because we're sisters. We've never had that feedback. It's always from someone listening who thinks it's disrespectful. I'm like, there are millions of other podcasts you can listen to.
Yes.
So listen. And actually I had the reassurance for me, Tanya Cash reached out.
That's who I was thinking about.
Tanya Cash reached out and said, you told my story beautifully. Every fact is accurate, and did a big gap. And I was like, okay, then that, if the survivor is saying that, when we crack a little joke about how disgusting her kidnapper was or something, and she still got there and was like, you told my story beautifully. I'm like,
wow.
There it is. There it is. Jennifer Aspenson too.
That's all you need.
I talked to her and I'm like, okay, that's all I need. Screw the rest of y'all. I know. Validation's there. Go listen to something else. We're not for everyone.
It's free. We're not for everyone. Go listen to Case File. Case File's great, and he does not cut up.
Crack
that's
a
it.
Joke.
That's it. He's great.
His tone doesn't change.
No.
I love when you guys say something, and then you're like, you all know what I mean. And it's so true, and it's like, I do know what they mean, and I just feel like that really helps you seem so down to earth and like connect with your listeners. And I feel like, you know, if you do say something, I make fun of the perp, but you're like, you know what I mean? And it's like, people do. Like, once you say that, you're like, yeah, that guy is an asshole.
Yeah. I think for the most part, people get it.
Yeah.
I
mean, and y'all are the same way. Y'all have the same kind of, you know, vibe.
But you know what, though? It's so hard because if it weren't for me being I'm currently still a producer, you know, so I still have to work with the families. I still have to work with the cops and the DAs and stuff. So I really reel myself in on my tone because I don't want to be doing a show for A&E or ID, whatever. And they catch wind of my tone is being a little too tongue in cheek or too, and Melissa's like, but we need our personalities to show. So there's this really fine line that we walk because of what I do.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. That that the difference in TV and podcasting? Not to turn the interview around.
Oh my God.
Is that what because you said earlier, like TV and podcasting is so different how you write for each. I'm like, oh wait, how so? Why?
So it depends on the show, but I mean, you'll see it's very formulaic in the fact that you never start with the victimology because it's like, no one wants to open a show, an hour long show and hear like, so-and-so was born in 1980. It's like, you want to start with the 911 call. So see a watch, it'll start with something juicy. It'll be like a call comes in. It'll be something hard hitting to rope the viewer in.
Yeah.
Where I feel like podcasting, you can tell it any way you want. You can.
That's true.
You could start with the victimology. You could start with a crime. You could start with any point in the story. And then these television shows will go through the red herrings, especially the schlocky ones. Like it'll just be like, was it the guy at the bar? And it's like, it's just, they check off these suspects. So, you know, it's not them. And then you get, so it has a flow to them where this, you can, it's your platform, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the other thing about writing for TV, I've noticed with sometimes when you write, it's often repetitive because you have to come back from commercial break and be like, kind of recap what you just talked about.
Yeah.
Whereas like, obviously we're not going to do that because even with commercials in the podcast, it's different than commercials on TV.
Yeah.
So there's sometimes where like I'm reading it. I'm like, wait, I feel like we just talked about this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's a good point too.
And then for YouTube, once we, something that Melissa had to remind me of is that it's a very visual production. Like I try to put up videos, all pictures of everything we're talking, very CSA. You have to describe that then for the listening audience, because we're looking at it. So I feel like everybody can see it, but then I'm like, oh shit, I forgot that people are just listening. So we try to describe what we're looking at too.
Yeah. That is hard. Something I want to be better about on YouTube. It's like putting up visuals when we're talking about them. Cause we'll describe something like we'll post it, but that for YouTube,
and then
like,
never do. Yeah. We do.
Yeah. On Instagram or somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It's a lot to keep up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I heard you in one episode too, and I was like, oh my gosh, good point. And your job, like with this, is this, and this is probably how y'all got started, I would imagine, especially since you do this all the time, every day. You get to pick the case you talk about, whereas on TV, it's given to you. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, that would be hard.
That would be
do
hard.
That to say, hey, this week you're doing this, and it's a story that I'm not, you know.
That's what you're doing, a kid or something.
Oh yeah. And you're like, I don't want to.
Yeah. And it's different because when you get the assignments, it's not just like a weekly thing. Like that you could be on this show for 3 months. So I just did a brand new case. When I started messaging you guys, I was in outside of Detroit doing it. Yes. It was a brand new story. And like, it had never been done on TV before. And when I read the pitch, to be completely honest, I was like, okay, this story's awful. Like there was no mystery to it. There was no this. Uh-huh. And I went out there and then working with these families and really connecting with them and learning about when you're sitting across from them, interviewing them, and they're just telling you these personal stories. And, I left Michigan going, this was the most connected to a case I've ever felt in my entire life. Like, honest to God, like it was about this kid, Emilio Valdez. And I was like, we interviewed 5 sisters for the episode. I felt like I should change my name to Eduardo Valdez by the end of the day. Like, I was like indoctrinated into their family. It was so cool.
Wow. But
you're absolutely right though. Like, one of the great things about this is we can bring attention to cases that would normally never go on television because they don't hold enough mystery. So all those victims, just because there's not enough twists and turns, will never have their story heard.
Oh, yeah. That's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, and same with kid cases. Ed, when we first started this, I looked at you and I said, you know, I don't have kids. I have dogs. Mm-hmm. So I said to you, like, are you okay if we do kid cases, or do you want to stay away from that? Like, some people don't want to talk about, I get it. Like, he's got 2 kids and 2 stepkids. So, and I asked, and you said you did want to do it because a lot of networks, you can't do kids because it is too much for people.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's like a quota. They were like, you can do 2 kid cases this season. Like, it's.
Oh, wow. Really? Wow. Oh, that's interesting.
That is really interesting. A listener reached out and was like, do someone about it was some murderer who killed her kids. I was like, oh God, people really don't like kid cases. She's like,
I know
their stories need to be told too. I was like,
exactly.
That's right. True. I know.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is true.
I think in one of our first episodes, we said no kids cases. And I'm like, we've broken that time and time again.
Yeah.
It's, there's no way. Well, I mean, there is a way around it, but there's just some cases that I'm like, I'm so compelled to tell y'all about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, never say never on a topic, I guess.
100%. Well, this, so as you know, as much as anybody doing a podcast, a consistent podcast, the amount of work that goes into these, we don't talk about it a lot on our show because it's like, we just want to put a good product out there. We're not going to sit there and whine and complain, but as people who are in the same boat as us, what does it take to deliver a high quality product week after week, after week, after week? Like consistency is key. So what kind of toll does that take on you guys, your personal life?
Well, luckily I got to quit corporate. Before that,
that was big news. Know, that's awesome.
It was so funny. Called Ed. Like it was, I was like,
she called me. I was like,
oh, love that.
I don't care if someone,
you're the best, Melissa.
I was so excited. I called and I was like, guess what? She gets to quit a chubby full time podcast.
Yeah. And I was just like, goals, man.
It
goals.
It's the dream for sure. Before that, and Rach is in the boat now, where you get up at like, you know, 3:30, 4 a.m. and work before work. And then, you know, a little bit after, if we have to record at night or something. The story itself, you know, you have to get every fact right. And I do. I want to double check, triple check everything that I'm putting out there. So it takes, I mean, we alternate each week and it takes the full 10 days in between our recordings. Really?
Easily
to get one done.
Yeah. And at least 4 times a week. Yeah. I get up at 4 o'clock and work on it. You just make it work because there's nothing worse than going. And I'm sure y'all have had episodes like this where you're going into it and you feel a little rushed. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, oh, I really wish I had another day to work on this.
Yeah.
But we record like right up to like, it gets released on Thursdays. We record Tuesdays and that's like the deadline we can record for our editor. Who's a saint, but yeah, there's just nothing worse than feeling like you're going into it and you're like, oh, I could have done better on this. I didn't have time.
Yeah.
So, well, and we want to get to that point because we do it all ourselves. Like I do all the editing. Melissa does most of the writing. Like it is just,
I cannot rolling. Imagine
me neither.
Doing all of it. Mm-mm. That. Yeah. I bet you like having control over that, but I will say hiring an editor was the best thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
There's no way I could work.
I feel like what we're doing is not rocket science. It's like I can just tell someone the little tricks for the show and then go have at it. I would love that.
Right.
Take
I know.
It from me. Take it.
You would not give up that control.
I would in a heartbeat. You don't know me at all, Melissa. You don't know me at all.
Melissa, you write all the episodes?
The majority of them, yeah.
Nice.
Wow. Mm.
Jeez.
So, because Melissa, you like I lean on cases that I've worked, which – pro tip, I already have like outlines that I've done for networks that I just kind of tweak it to be a podcast. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I have the legwork. What's great about that is the legwork is done. The research is done. I know it's accurate because the script was annotated by legal, you know, so I know it's right. But then Melissa then doesn't have that luxury. So she'll take a brand new story that she'll find. So there's a lot more research involved on her end. But because I'm always editing, Melissa, I know you work just as hard, but in a different way.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't so imagine.
It's a lot. But you know what I was thinking too? Not just the writing, research, editing, and all of that, but like the social media is like in an episode I was listening to earlier, you guys were talking about Twinks and talking about how you're like, I gave up on Instagram because it was just too much like advertising on Instagram because it's just so much and every platform has different nuances that you have to do it their way and
you have to respond to every comment. You have to engage. Yeah. I'm like, I mean,
it's exhausting.
It is.
Yeah. And like you said, every platform has like a different like best practice. So for this one, you know, TikTok and Instagram Reels, they're one and the same to us. But best practices, no, we should be recording those in Reels in Instagram. Right. I'm like, no.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? That is a full-time
job. There's no way.
No.
That's what Rebecca's been doing most of since she's quit is all our TikTok, our social media. I'm like, I can't imagine. It takes me so long to knock that stuff out. Oh my God.
So I listen to you guys. I don't watch you. So are you in widescreen on YouTube?
We are. Yes.
Okay, because that's the thing is like we shoot in 16:9 widescreen for YouTube, but then every social media, it has to be portrait. So it looks like shit when we go to post it on.
Yep.
Yeah, it does. If it's something we know we want to post, we'll tell our editor, like, we want this clip and we're going to post it on social media. So he'll do it in a, you know, iPhone format. But that's, I just roll with it.
It's too much.
Oh, and there's more. We got some requests to be Lemonade, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, and I'm like, nah.
I'm like, we're good on social media.
We're all set. Thank you.
Sorry. Thank
Melissa just signed us up for Blue Sky. I'm like, what the hell is Blue Sky?
What the hell is Blue Sky?
Ask her. I don't know.
I don't even know. I heard that the kids like it. So
okay.
I don't know.
maybe just to get the handle. I'll sign up for that stuff just to get the handle. But I'm like, I do not want to post on any other platforms. It's so hard.
Agreed.
So when you go to do your cases, I know you want to do like the oh my God moment. So do you ever tell each other what your cases are going to be beforehand? Like, we try not to, but I can't keep a secret. So I call Ed and I'm like, oh my God, this case is wild because X, Y, Z.
We have to plan too. We got to pre-produce it to an extent. You know?
Yeah, totally. No, we would, we'll call or text each other and say like, does so-and-so mean anything to you? And see if they've like, heard of it. And sometimes it's yes. And be like, oh yeah, I know that one. Like, okay, I'm going to do that one next week. But most often it's like kind of not really, or we know somewhat about it, but not the ins and outs at all.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we'll say like who we're doing, but not any details.
No details whatsoever. And yeah, for the most part, it's usually like, I think I've heard of that. And then she'll tell it. And I'm like, I know this one, but again, yeah, no details. And then once I've done it where she took mine, like we were doing the same. So now we really do like need to tell each other what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah. Just a name. And if it's like, okay, don't touch it.
Yeah.
So awesome. Do you still listen to other true crime podcasts or do you try? Like I found myself, I don't want to stay away, but I also don't want to hear someone else say it and like think it's my own idea or get accused, you know, like
I get worried about that too, where I'm like, what if I love the way they tell it and I'm like,
yeah,
it's so much better than ours.
Yeah, it really is. Or I'm like thinking about doing this case and I'm like, oh my God, I really want to steal how they did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know. Yes, we but I do listen to mainly YouTube now, I guess. I mean, again, everyone's going towards YouTube, mainly because YouTube has like, they'll have like someone will do like a top five true crime cases with a plot twist. And it's like a 20-minute episode total. So it's a very quick overview just so I can get an idea and be like, oh, I'm going to do a deep dive on that or something like that. Mm-hmm. I get ideas.
I find myself doing the same thing. I'm like, I'm scared I'm going to like the way they told it and it's going to make me feel like I'm stealing
Yeah.
Or the opposite, or I'm too critical. I'm like, oh, this thing is annoying me. This thing's annoying me. Mm-hmm. Usually just road trips too. I don't listen to that many.
But I still watch all the TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you? Yeah. That's funny. It's well, TV's TV's a dying art, unfortunately. Like I'm learning it. Like I've gone through longer stretches of unemployment in this. Like right now I'm building a treehouse. That's what I've been doing for the past week. Like I'm not like, but networks are so scared right now about the next step. Like they don't know, should we put money into another television show that no one's going to watch or invest that money in some kind of streaming short, quicker format thing that people are eating up. So it's TV's like,
oh, that's interesting.
It's phasing out, which is
really, weird. Oh, I hate to hear that. Cause I watch them all too.
I know. And you'll still see them, but I think you're going to see that there's no longer the in-between shows. You either have like the Wives with Knives, like this real, like schlocky stuff. And then you have the really high end Netflix premium docs.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So you're missing all those kind of in-between shows that no one wants to pay for.
Oh yeah. Oh. That's true. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I had no idea.
I know. Yeah. I love TV.
That's me.
Melissa and I were just talking the other day. There's this, I heard from a showrunner that I used to work for, and he was just telling me he's been meeting with some network execs, and people are eating up like these Mexican soap operas that are these names. It's like Nurse Doing Doctor is like the name of the drama. It's a 20-minute show broken up into 1-minute episodes. And then you essentially get like 4 1-minute episodes free. And then it's like $1 every, and it has like 44 million, like people in Mexico are eating this stuff up and they think
that
it's
would
like
drive me crazy.
Coming
me
this
too.
Way.
That's what I said.
Oh, interesting.
That would drive me crazy. Yeah.
It's like, think about how young people consume their information. They do it in a portrait mode and just like this. So that's the future, unfortunately.
And 1 minute, you can't even.
The young folks.
Yeah. But it's true. You can't hold their attention, I guess. Or
no, that's what it is. And is gone. Yeah. You have 1 second.
Oh, yep. God. I was wondering about the art of like datelines and, you know, forensic files, all that. They start with the crime. I'm like, there has to be a reason for that. There has to be an art to it.
Yeah,
when I'm stuck in a story, it's a hook.
It's essentially the prehistoric version of what we're seeing now. Like, you have to hook that viewer immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People don't love a slow burn as much.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Unless it has a killer ending.
Yeah. Exactly. There's a reason. Right.
Yeah.
So you guys have some big things coming, like a new studio. When does that start?
Well, I'm going up there, I think, Thursday to help set it up. I got all the equipment, and it's shipping to Rach. Mm-hmm. And then we go up there. We're going to, like, Zoom our producer and figure it out together.
I know. We've never recorded in person.
Yeah. Everyone says the vibe is better in person. So I'm like, the chemistry is going to be...
Yeah. Even better.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's got to be. And now we've been toying with that idea, maybe like not yet, just because it's such a big investment and we need space and we need this. Yeah. And like, we're just not there yet. But we're thinking about how we're going to like, these aren't stories where you can just talk. You have to read information. So it's like, are you staring at a monitor the whole time? Are you talking to each other? Like, I feel like it's going to be harder.
That's what I worry about.
Because actually, every time I think of a podcast in studio, it's like a personal or, you know, lifestyle podcast where they can just chat. You're right. I actually never thought about that. So thank
you. It's like you need to like read too. It's like, where am I going to read this? I'm going to put a monitor like on Melissa's face. Just hold this monitor so I can read this.
Yeah. That's what I worry about. I'm like, is it going to be awkward? Because I'm going to be looking at my computer and like kind of her. We'll see. Mm-hmm.
We'll figure it out.
Maybe. Maybe not. It'll be fine.
Yeah, that was one thing we were like talking about. And I was like, well, how do we do that? Because it's not like you can remember all the dates, and you definitely don't want to get something wrong, because then you look bad, but then you know people are going to be all over you about it.
People will annihilate you.
Oh, yeah, they will. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see.
We'll figure it out.
I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. We are so excited. It's going to be, I hope it turns our YouTube at least around for the.
It definitely will. That's the way to instantly elevate any production, is to get like high quality cameras. Like, we use our laptop. We were just trying to get this thing started, and then it would evolve. Yeah. But it's like, we're still using our laptop cameras. But Johnny Television here is like expected to have this high end. And it's like, I can't afford that right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You're right. No, they give me that.
Y'all have like a backdrop. At least you have that.
I know. Y'all look professional.
That was the first thing we did. That was like our our motivator. It was like, let's order these things. Let's have it a uniform look.
And,
wait, look how freaking glossy they like. Look at this.
Yeah, we didn't think that through. Getting a matte background.
There's a reason nobody's moved. We're just going yes.
Yeah, we can't move because then you can see the glare.
No, it's perfect. Not for y'all.
Kurt Cobain behind me, please.
Yeah, right. Love it.
So I got to know, have you ever been, well, first of all, have you ever been recognized out in public? But also, is it weird? Like, I just said, I love when you guys do blah, blah, blah. Like, is that so weird when people you don't know, like, know about your life? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, that makes total sense. I don't know. I actually love when people know about our lives, because it just cracks me up. Like, someone reached out and was like, hey, I know Payne loves golf. That's my husband. Are y'all going to whatever tournament it wasn't Masters, but it was something. And I was like, wait, do we know her?
Yeah, who was like, no.
I looked at her Instagram, no mutual. I was like, oh, she just listens. Oh my God. That is so funny. I know. I love it.
Yeah. I was at a birthday party and someone came up to me and was like, I just wanted to say, I love your podcast. I was like, how did do you know that it was me?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Like, yeah, you put, y'all blast yourselves everywhere. I'm like, oh, right.
Yeah. Oh. We've only been in public once when someone like came up to us
and was like, y'all like, podcast? Like, oh, I was so excited. Yeah. We so love exciting. It.
I'm longing for that to happen again.
Yeah, we're open.
You should
books.
Be like, we also have this line of bras that we're trying to get off the ground.
I know.
I actually wonder what Twinks, how Twinks would stand I today because that. We have so many listeners reach out being like, wait, is the website still up? I'll buy one. I'm like, oh, where were you a year ago?
Yeah. 2 years ago. Yeah.
2 years
that
ago.
That is awesome.
I just said that to Ed the other night. We had a meeting with at his house with one of our research producers, and I was like, we were talking about what we wanted to ask you. And I was like, I'm going to ask them if they still have any bras left.
We donated them to a women's shelter here in Asheville, North Carolina. Awesome. Okay, it was good. It was good. It went to a good cause.
That's awesome. Speaking of like a good cause, is that kind of what drives you to keep going? There's obviously a goal with all this. And for us, it's just telling stories of about people who maybe would never have their stories told, but also to like bring people guests that may not. Like I have some pretty crazy access just from being in this for so long. Like I just the people I've met and know. So I feel like being able to show the world my job. And it's like, this is the stuff I do for a living. And it's so much fun. But then to like bring some of that and like even getting Melissa involved, like to have her interview Tanya Brown and to interview some of these people, it's like, Melissa's she was a fangirl. Like we become friends, but we're
Ted Bundy's very, cousin.
Ted Bundy's cousin. She's like in love.
I know. Yeah. That is insane.
Oh, wait, I need to listen to that one.
I know. Oh, that's incredible.
Edna, she's awesome. Yeah. Edna.
She's wonderful. I want her to adopt incredible. Me. So I'm trying to work that in a conversation.
I said, just get her to accept your friend request on Facebook first before you go and filling out adoption papers.
Have her autograph something and it's secretly adoption papers.
Yes.
Perfect. Yeah. Good idea. Sign a copy of your book.
Yeah. Mommy.
That's perfect.
That's awesome. But is that what pushes you guys to like what drives you guys?
That is a big contributor. Now that our TikTok following is bigger, that being able to help someone who's like nieces and nephews are missing. I spent all day on that. I had not gotten to quit my corporate job at that time. And I canceled my meetings and I did a 2-part TikTok on this listener's missing nephews and who were kidnapped. And I'm like, how is this not like national news? So I did a big TikTok on it and it got tens of thousands of views. And that was like, oh, though I feel so reward. Like that makes me feel so good to help them out and help those kids' dad out who kept sharing it and being like, this is a perfect recap of it. Please y'all share whatever. That, yes, fills my heart so much. That wasn't it. I didn't even almost like think of it going into this because I just didn't think it would get this big. But I'm like, that is, yes, that drives.
Yeah, awesome.
For sure.
I want you to shout out their name because they still have not been found.
They have not been found.
And Roughcorn.
Please do.
Ransom and Jepson Roughcorn. They are their mother kidnapped them and they have still not been found. And that was before Thanksgiving.
She doesn't have custody. I mean, obviously, but
no.
Do you have some more details? Like where? Where and when?
Yes, it was
Phoenix, outside of Phoenix. That's where they lived. These two were
so it was their mother was a freshman in college, I think, when she started dating their father, who is a freshman in high school. He was 14, she was 19. Her parents were like very pro this relationship. His were very freaked out, obviously, being like, what does a 19-year-old want with you? That is crazy. So he ended up moving out of his own house, moving in with her. So at 14 years old, I'm like, that's grooming. You're whatever. Yeah,
it's so weird.
So they've been together for like 5 years and he got her pregnant. So he's only 20. And then, a falling out happened. They went their separate ways, but
they got married.
Yeah,
they got married. They got divorced.
They had
two kids, wow. Jepson and Ransom Roughcorn, thinking that would fix the marriage. It
did. Of course it. Yeah,
of course. Yeah. And they got on a kind of cordial team, and they're like, "Okay, let's co-parent. You can have visitation. I'll be there. Whatever." And I think his girlfriend was there or something. Anyway, he came home, and they were gone. And all of a sudden, cops come knocking on his door and they're like, your son was just admitted to the hospital for fentanyl. Three-year-old.
Oh my God.
The three-year-old tested positive
That's
for fentanyl.
Insane.
And he was like, I haven't had my kids today. My ex-wife took them. And like, No, they just said that they were in your custody and they were spending, he was like, search it. What can I do? Like, go get drug tested. So him and his girlfriend, because she was there too, both got drug tested, negative. And then the cops went to the ex-wife's house to test her family and they're all gone. They have not been seen since.
And the
so messed up.
The mom or someone who was there, like her mom, refused to do drug tests.
Yeah, they were there when they came in and said, we're going to do drug testing. And they said, absolutely not. And then the people from child custody went to the cops. The cops got a warrant. And then they came back and everyone was gone.
They've been gone. Including the kid. That was November. That was
November 2024.
And I Google it and I'm like, there still doesn't seem to be an update. I don't, there's a GoFundMe.
Yeah,
look it up if you can.
Crazy.
Is that dad is still probably I think 22 at this point. He has no idea where to start. So he has a GoFundMe. If y'all can donate anything, it's for the investigation.
So this, I mean, could be your answer, but are there any specific cases that really stick with you? Like, we covered a case about 12-year-old Stanley Edwards, and it was like way back at the beginning. And it fucked us both up to the point that, like,
it's so obscure. It's a very obscure story.
And it's super obscure. And I don't have kids again. So, like, the cases don't usually affect me that badly. And we both, like, broke down crying in that episode. And we were like, what is happening? But it is, like, I have goosebumps, like, just thinking about that episode. And so are there any cases like that with you that you're just like, I can't, even if you didn't cover it, just like, I can't get this out of my head.
I need to listen to that first of all, because I don't know Stanley, but
freaking I don't know that one.
It would have to be Ashley Reeves' case stuck with me for like days, where she, you know, a guy is, her old teacher, is sitting in the interrogation room, lying his ass off, but finally comes to confess what he did. I strangled her. I put my belt around her neck. I wait till it snapped. The belt snapped. I put her body in the woods, just completely confessing to her death. And 30 hours later, they go in the woods and she opens her or takes a breath.
She's breathing. Get EMT. Get EMTs.
I can see your eyes moving with the light, Ashley. Can you say anything?
That is crazy. Seeing that body cam footage again on, I think it was Investigation Discovery, one of those shows that the actual body cam footage, I guess because she did survive, they played the whole thing. And I was like, oh, they should really have, like, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep for the next 3 days. Things like that really affect me, where I'm like, and that's what makes me emotional, even tear up now, to think how scared she was. I hate the idea of anyone being so scared and feeling so alone and so helpless. It really gets to me.
Yeah. Cases like that, I feel like there are a million. Mm-hmm. My very first episode was Frank Floyd, who essentially there was a documentary about it that came out not long after the case. Like, I was like, I didn't know they were going to do a documentary on that. I would have held off because everyone started knowing about it and we like to stick to somewhat obscure. But he just, there was no MO. Everything he would sexually assault young girls and then adults and then shoot one, strangle one, no MO. He took his ex-girlfriend. The biggest thing was he took his ex-girlfriend's 4 kids. She had to go to jail because she bounced a check buying diapers or something awful. So she spent the week in a jail. And while she was gone, he took her 4 kids and like sprinkled them throughout foster care, kept one for himself, fled. God. She called police. Yeah. They were like, we can't do anything about it. And
they couldn't do anything about it?
No. And he raised that girl until he killed her when she was 30 something. He that raised her as sucks. This is my daughter. And then when she was of an appropriate age, he changed it to this is my wife. And it was like, why did you, what? So she never even found one of her daughters. And one of the foster cares, she never found her son. She may have found 2 daughters. She never found her son. He ended up being adopted into some family in North Carolina. And I'm like, sorry, what? Why did you do that? People are batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm. You are not kidding. And it's crazy how people toy with human lives.
Right. Like, I mean, right. It's such a, for their own benefit. It's just the I mean, it's so easy to say selfishness because I'm thinking with a rational mind, but I'm like, you're actually the worst. Like the disregard for human life, especially those who play the part of like a teacher, a cop,
unfair.
Yeah, this is so unfair. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You're here to lead us.
It's awful.
Freaking terrible.
I have to look into Stanley. Who'd you say Stanley what?
Stanley Edwards. And be gentle. It was like our fourth episode, so it
yeah.
That's what I was about. When you get new listeners, are you like, please listen in reverse?
Yeah, start at the beginning.
Yeah. Please. If not for the sound quality alone, but also I'm sure the conversation. Yes. I'm like, oh, I bet it's so cringy. I can't.
Give us a full report. Like, listen to it and give us a full report on it.
Yeah.
Listen to us cry for 5 minutes.
Please, I've added more episodes than I can count.
A million episodes. Don't even worry.
Insane.
So this is my favorite question to ask everybody. What if you had a magic genie and he was like, hey, I will solve one case for you. Like, mine would be Bryce Laspisa, because if I don't find out where the hell he is, I'm getting sweaty thinking about it. Like, I need
He's on our list.
He goes under the category with like Brian Schaefer. And baffling mystery. David Alan Lewis might be a good one.
Who's that? Ooh. I don't know that one.
Wait, did I? That's a good one. Sorry, I always say Alan.
Yeah,
David Glenn Lewis. Say Alan. Oh my God, he went missing in 1993 outside of Dallas. Like he has a wife and a kid, and the wife and kid went shopping into Dallas. I think it was like 2 hours away. And he's in Amarillo, Texas. That's where he is.
Okay. Yeah.
And he stayed that weekend because the Super Bowl was on. The Cowboys were playing that weekend, like big Cowboys fan. So he opted to stay it, of course. So they get home late Sunday night and they see the VCR was running. So the game recorded, the dryer was going. There was two freshly made sandwiches in the refrigerator. His wedding ring was on the counter, but he was nowhere to be found. The Cowboys won that night. So his wife was like, oh, he went out celebrating. Okay. Got up, long story short, he's missing. They reported to the police. They found his car, like downtown Amarillo. They found his keys, wallet, ID, everything in it. And it goes cold for like 13 years.
Wow.
And there's a special on, it's actually a Seattle, a retired detective did it, Seattle, Washington, did a story on the mishaps that cops used to do on adult missing persons cases or something. Mm-hmm. And David Glenn Lewis was featured in it. And a guy in Washington, also a retired cop, was like, oh, wait, I want to get in a rabbit hole now that the internet's a thing. And like Googled it. Or I guess this was like 15 years later, I guess, but Googled it and David Glenn Lewis's picture came up and it like sent chills down his spine because it reminded him of a case he worked on in 1993 of a guy with big glasses, distinguished glasses.
Yeah.
And he was like, wait, that. And so he like called up the precinct that he used to work on and was like, go to evidence locker, whatever, and see if, they found it. And it was the same glasses. So they sent a DNA kit to his mother and they,
he was listed as a John Doe. The Seattle one was John Doe.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He was listed as a John Doe because it was a guy who was killed by a hit and run on a very desolate highway in Moxie, Washington. Hmm. And so they unveiled that like an 18-wheeler back in 1993, passed a man walking down the street in military fatigues. David Glenn Lewis was not in the military, never has been, doesn't own the clothes.
His wife was like, I've never seen him.
Walking down in military fatigues. He was walking down this dark ass highway in the middle of the road. So the 18-wheeler radioed to others, watch out, there's a guy walking in the middle of the road. Mm-hmm. And then another 18-wheeler radioed and said, I just saw a guy laying in the middle of the road. So the first guy did a U-turn, turned around, found his body, called the police. It was been a John Doe forever. It defies logic. So they had their VCR. It gets into some crazy stuff. I got goosebumps. The VCR, it was a manual. He would have had to hit record. It wasn't one of those you can set a timer and leave.
Yeah.
He had to hit record on the VCR when the game started, which was at 5 p.m. that Sunday. His wife got home at 11 p.m. So in those 6 hours, by the way, the dryer is going. So that goes for like an hour. So in those 6 hours, by the time the Super Bowl started, and I don't know how long a dryer goes, but not 6 hours. We'll call it spade a spade. Someone started the dryer. So within 6 hours of him hitting record and her coming home at 11, he was gone. And he traveled 2,500 miles. Mm-hmm. There is no direct flights. So he couldn't, even driving there, he wouldn't have made it, obviously. Flying there, he wouldn't have made it.
They did the flight path. Like, he would not have been able to be on that desolate highway within 6 hours. There was no flight.
It was a day and
he
a
never
half.
Boarded a flight. I mean, back then you could use a fake name if you boarded a flight. But it's
so
defies logic. That no answer.
Yeah, they did it where it's like the earliest flight from Amarillo would have been 9 p.m. that night. You fly to L.A., have a 4-hour layover, fly to Seattle, have a 3-hour layover, and then drive the 4 hours.
So nothing made sense.
None of it made sense.
How did he get there? It's shit like that that I'm like, maybe that one. If I had to solve one, because I'm like, and they never found out. That's it. He was seen in military fatigues, and he wasn't wearing his glasses. His wife was like, he needs glasses to see, and he has never been in the military. No idea. Nothing ever came from it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Wow. How does that happen?
I get on a tangent.
I know, and again, I'm like a million. JonBenet, I think JonBenet needs to be solved.
Yeah,
Madeline McCann.
I think that will. I think JonBenet will.
I think solved. There's enough there.
I hope.
Because it's just one of those. I'm like, it's so solvable. I mean, I know. Whoever involved, and everyone has their own theories, and I have mine, but they really lucked out with those. That Boulder Police Department. They really lucked out.
I'll say.
Wow, because it's so solvable. I don't.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know.
Classic.
Classic. I mean, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Brandon Swanson's another one.
Baffling.
Judy Smith. How's she here?
What about one where the kid, was it Zeb Quinn, where there was like the lips drawn on the
What is puppy, that?
The puppy. Yes. Are like, where'd the puppy come from?
Yeah,
where did the puppy come from?
Puppies could talk.
I know.
What'd you see?
I know.
If puppies could talk, Melissa would be remarried.
That's true. True. I know. I do think the right person's in jail for that. But I think there's a lot more to that story. And I want to know. And he will never talk. He did his confession. He got his plea deal. He's not going to answer anything about the puppy. He's not going to answer anything about the lips. Like, why? Who else is involved? I think that guy was too big of a dipshit to get away with that for that long.
Yeah,
exactly.
Other people are involved. And we'll just, he said his uncle was, but he's not. It's crazy. Yeah. Zeb Quinn. Oh, bless him.
Yeah.
Great answers. No, those are all. And two of them I've never heard of. So now I'm like all intrigued about these,
these other cases. Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh my gosh. Crazy. Well, before we wrap up, so there's one thing we want to do. So when we first started Murder Unscripted, we did like little palate cleansers where I'd ask Melissa some true crime questions and just try to catch her. So we put together.
I'm sorry, 14 and a half out of 15.
You did pretty damn good. And one's question. I mean, and that's why this podcast exists. I'm like, I'm looking for somebody who's like to pair with, and it was like this girl, just a friend of mine, knows more about true crime than I do.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So y'all are friends before this?
We had met on a local, there was a local podcast that had reached out, and it was during my last unemployment. I was unemployed for like a year and a half. Cold Case Files ended. They didn't pick anything up. It was just that we were sitting there waiting for the call and it never got picked up. So for like a year and a half, and that's where the whole podcast thing kind of came to fruition. But we had met, somebody put out an ad looking for hosts for another local podcast. So both of Melissa and I responded and were on that for a little bit. And I think I ended up doing like one episode. I'm like, it's just not for me. But I was like, there's one person on that team that I like had an instant chemistry with. So we just started bullshitting and hanging out.
That.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Awesome. Yeah.
I know.
Because I was like listening to her talk. I'm like, why do you know like perpetrator shoe sizes? And it's very strange. Like, I'm a little frightened.
Why don't you know your husband's birthday, but you know like Ted Bundy's belt size? Yeah.
Yeah. You know what his last meal was.
Exactly. It's like creepy. But so we would do this little like palate cleanser where we would just play a little mini game just to kind of, we do story blocks. So we do a different theme every month. And it just kind of was a nice way to like, okay, we've told three sad stories. Now we had a guest on, like, let's just reset a little bit. So we came up with a little game for you guys.
Yeah,
and it's going to determine which one is the true crime queen of you.
Oh my God. Oh my God, I'm scared.
Yeah. I know. Because clearly I suck at names. So here we go.
I know. It's going to be, of course, one of those. I'm like, that sounds familiar.
So do you remember Well, I called it the drinking game, but apparently it's an icebreaker. But we're going to go with the drinking game. Two treats. I know. I sound like such an alcoholic. Like, I'm like, the drinking game.
And I'm red wine right now.
I'm like, oh, yeah, icebreaker too. But two truths and a lie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, we use that for inspiration and we created two lies and a crime.
Okay.
So
okay.
We have three rounds, and each round, Ed and I will read you three true crime descriptions. And it's like, ridiculous ways people have died or ridiculous murder weapons. And then you need to tell us, like, for each round, which of the three cases are real and which two are made up by our good buddy ChatGPT.
Yes.
So, Rachel and Rebecca, are you ready to play Two Lies and a Crime?
Yes.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Let's do it.
The lie detector determined that was a lie. Oh!
All right, round one. There's three rounds. So there's going to be three cases. One of them is real, two are fake. You have to pick out the real one. Story number one. On the evening of October 19th, 1993, in the rural town of Cypress Hollow, Iowa, 61-year-old Iris Pinnell was found dead in her sunroom, bludgeoned with an antique cast iron birdcage. Deputies responded to do a welfare check after neighbors reported not seeing Iris for several days. Her son-in-law, Curtis Penwell, was taken into custody later that night. According to his confession, a heated argument over family inheritance escalated when Iris called his business idea, quote, delusional garbage. Authorities say Curtis snapped, grabbing the birdcage in a fit of rage and struck her repeatedly.
Okay.
That's story number one.
All right.
I'm going to get story ideas off of this. I'm going to be like, dibs on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Story number two.
All right. On November 14th, 2014, in the coastal town of Windermere, Oregon, 38-year-old Mason Kellerman burst into a public library after hours and fatally attacked librarian Rachel Miles with a heavy brass floor lamp from the reading lounge. Witnesses claimed Kellerman shouted about invisible signals being broadcast through the building's Wi-Fi. Family members told investigators that Mason had been behaving erratically for weeks, convinced that the government agents were monitoring him through smart appliances.
Oh, that's like a modern day clue. He was in the library, right? with a lamp.
Wait, what year did you say just then?
2014.
Okay.
Yep, 2014.
Okay. Listen.
Okay. Story number three. Friends and family of Derek Burdo said he was out of his head in the days before he drove a car into a Tarrant County, Texas Baptist church and beat the pastor to death with an electric guitar that he had picked up in the church's music room. Burdo's widow told authorities he was paranoid that someone had injected him with drugs and that he tried in vain to get help from a medical center. So those are your three stories.
Okay.
Two are not even real.
Oh. Okay. I think it would take a lot to bludgeon someone with a birdcage.
I do too, but I feel like that story's real. Like, I'm like, I know that story. If Iris owned a bunch of fast food chains, I'm like, I think it's that one because I remember a story of some.
I cannot give you any more information.
Okay. I'm gonna go with.
I kind of think
electric
last
guitar and first and third are not true.
Okay, so you're saying the floor lamp and the Wi-Fi.
The floor lamp and the Wi-Fi. Although that kind of sounds.
Well, when I say it like that, sorry.
I think the last one is true. The reason I asked what year is because I'm like, I don't think that we had many smart appliances in 2014. I can't remember, though. I mean, I know we had iPhones, but I don't think it was like it is.
No, that's
you
a
know,
stupid
it's
reason.
Not Alexa. Yeah. It's not, you know, shit. Hmm. Why am I wrong? Okay, I think the third one.
Okay. Thanks. Derek Burdo did beat someone to death with an electric guitar.
Electric guitar.
While he was never professionally diagnosed, Burdo's widow believed he was mentally ill. Of course, no one will ever know for sure since he died at the scene while in a patrol car.
Oh, so,
wow.
Officers used a stun gun to restrain him before placing him in the car. But when they went to check on him 10 minutes later, they discovered he had no pulse. As it turns out, someone, probably himself, had injected him with drugs. So he was telling the truth about that.
Oh my God, wow. I love this game and how you presented after that. That was shocking.
Right.
Okay.
That's crazy.
I'm excited about this.
So are you ready for round two? It's one nothing.
Yeah.
So.
I'm so amped. Damn it. Now I'm on one. Now I'm feeling good. Give me another one.
All right. Round two, story number one. In April 2013, police discovered the dead body of Monica Gooden alongside a broken and bloody Xbox 360. The Xbox-wielding murderer was her boyfriend, Darius Johnson. Evidently, Johnson said he had to sacrifice her because she was somehow controlling him against his will, and killing someone born under the Taurus astrological sign was the only way to set his soul free.
Wow. If that's true, dibs.
You're like taking notes. You're like,
yeah. Yeah. I'm like, what'd you say?
All right. Story number two. In January of 1998 in Adler Falls, Vermont, 42-year-old Elaine Mercer was found dead in her farmhouse kitchen, bludgeoned with her own KitchenAid stand mixer. Police were called after a neighbor noticed Marissa's dogs, barking nonstop in the back door left ajar. Authorities say the attack occurred during an argument with her husband, Calvin Mercer, who later confessed to police that he just snapped after claiming Elaine had been poisoning his coffee for weeks. While in custody, a toxicology screen proved there were no toxins or poisons in Calvin's system.
Yikes. Wow. Ooh. Murders don't happen in Vermont, so I'm on.
That's true. So you're like, nope, next.
They're so nice.
No, there's no way.
Okay. Interesting.
All right. Story number three. In the afternoon of March 21st, 2012, in the suburban neighborhood of Briarwood Heights, California, 34-year-old Janine Himmelstein was found dead in her living room with a Batman cape tied tightly around her neck. The cape belonged to her 4-year-old son, who was in his room, thankfully unharmed and unaware of the violence that had unfolded. Janine's husband, Gregory Himmelstein, was arrested shortly after police arrived. Authorities say the couple had been facing mounting financial pressures, with Thomas becoming increasingly frustrated over their debt. During an argument earlier that day, Gregory became enraged when Janine questioned him about recent credit card transactions.
Ooh, I kind of think that one's real.
I kind of did too. But
I'm almost done. I'm going to go with three.
I'm going to go with one. Just because I don't want to pick the same one.
Would you have picked three if it wasn't?
I was on the fence. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I don't know.
Well,
oh shit.
Monica Gooden was beaten by an Xbox 360.
Oh my god!
Incidentally, Gooden wasn't even a Taurus, so there was no telling who had control of Johnson's soul now.
He also
told police that she would not die, and he fought her like he was fighting a dragon.
Because you're killing her with an Xbox remote. Like, what do you? Yeah,
you
that's
an asshole. You're an asshole, dick.
He also stabbed her repeatedly as some kind of like post-mortem ritual.
And she wasn't even a Taurus.
No, that's right. The irony.
Oh, that's my insane. God.
Dibs. You called dibs on that.
I know.
Yeah, you're like,
I'm
dibs.
Literally going to add that to our
wow,
list.
Wow, okay, you're two for two, Rach.
Yeah.
Man,
this is
a
bad
blowout.
Chance.
It's a blowout.
All right, last round. Story number one. In January 2013, police are called to a trailer park in Snohomish County, Washington, after residents hear fighting from a neighbor's house. When police arrived, they found 50-year-old Donna Lang passed out on her 51-year-old boyfriend with her breast completely smothering his face. The man was rushed to the hospital but was pronounced dead on arrival. Witnesses say they heard screaming just moments prior to police responding, and a clump of hair was found in the victim's hands.
Wow. Wow. That's wow.
Death by boob.
That's
titty. That's titty.
Sad.
What a way to go.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Don't murder me.
I know a bunch of guys that wouldn't be mad at that. Well,
yeah, it's been taken out that way.
All right, number two. On September 22nd, 2002, in the all-new neighborhood of Philadelphia, 42-year-old construction worker Robert Bobby Turner was arrested for the brutal murder of his boss, David Falston. The crime occurred on the construction site of a new housing project where David was found dead in the restroom, struck repeatedly with a heavy wooden toilet seat. Witnesses say tensions had been rising between the two men for weeks, with David constantly belittling Jack's work and making disparaging remarks about his skills. On that fateful morning, after a heated argument about a faulty blueprint, Jack snapped. In a fit of rage, he grabbed an uninstalled toilet seat and struck David multiple times, leaving him lifeless in the home's first floor powder room.
Ooh.
Wow. Okay. Death by toilet seat. Death by tits. Okay.
You know, those are
our good one.
You know, I did a forensic files that we were looking for obscure cases. He killed her. His name was Douglas Plude. It's out of Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And he literally drowned her in a toilet.
Oh, that was the only nightmare.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, first of all,
how do you make a show out of this? It's like pretty clear who did it.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to take you out of the zone. Okay. Story number three. In August 2009, in Beatty, Nevada, the 59-year-old owner of Lucky Seven's pawn shop, Irma Pierce, was found battered and bloody on the floor of her store. While Irma was alive, when paramedics arrived, she sadly succumbed to her injuries on the way to the hospital. Found at the scene was a bloody and damaged replica leg lamp from A Christmas Story that had been used to bludgeon Irma. Her killer, a 29-year-old drifter named Samson Visnov, was quickly apprehended when he tried to pawn items stolen from Irma's store.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think that would be like a BuzzFeed article that I would remember.
Yeah,
when
right.
From A Christmas Story, the lamp killed someone.
Yes.
I did too.
I actually think that sounds familiar. The toilet seat.
The toilet seat, titties, or let's see, what was the other one?
Leg lamp.
Yeah. I think toilet seat. I think number two. Yeah. We're both doing it.
Donna Lang did in fact crush her boyfriend with her boob.
She did.
What? Holy shit.
Wow.
So many things I'm about to have to Google.
When interviewed at the state, good luck. You're going to find this little paragraph. That's all. I can't find any information. When interviewed at the station, Lang was grossly intoxicated and told police she had no idea how the victim died. And for reference, Lang was 5'6 and weighed 192 pounds, and her boyfriend was 5'7, 175.
Oh, wow.
Investigators later learned that an altercation had taken place and Lang was charged with second degree murder.
Oh my God.
So there you go. That is two lies and a crime.
And I've got every single one wrong.
Wow. Yeah, you did.
That is shocking. Wait. So many rabbit holes to fall down.
Seriously.
I know.
I had so much fun with ChatGPT.
Uh-huh. Like, I know.
Oh my gosh. I was like, oh, that's a good one, but come up with a crazier murder weapon.
I was
pitching a show that of like a short format thing, like crazy murder weapons, like strange ways to die and stuff like that. And that, I had a bunch of these already written.
Oh, that's so good.
That's such a good one.
Which one did I just say I had dibs on?
What did you?
Xbox.
An Xbox. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Oh, man. Well, thank you guys for playing that. That was awesome.
That was fun. That's a great idea.
Yeah, that is a great idea.
Before you guys leave, what's next for you guys? Anything big, besides the studio? Is that like the next big thing?
Studio, and we will keep it going from there. Hopefully offer more Patreon tiers or something like that. And then hopefully eventually live shows eventually. So
yes,
yeah,
very cool.
That's the dream.
We'll save us seats.
Yeah,
fun.
Totally.
Y'all be the only two there.
We're thinking.
Us in the front row.
Yeah, no,
do the Xbox story.
Let's see how you tell it.
That's awesome. Yeah, please.
For people who aren't fans of yours or don't know when you air, so tell us about the show and when it airs and where they can find you.
It's every week, every Thursday morning. We post it at like 2 a.m. Thursday morning. Find us on TikTok. People are the worst _pod. Same thing for Instagram. And you can listen to us at Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get podcasts.
Mm-hmm. And email us at peoplearetheworstpod@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, you guys are not the worst. You are the best. So thank you so much.
Y'all are the best. Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you all so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. You made my whole life.
That was so nice. We really appreciate y'all.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. Seriously.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Man, are they down to earth or what?
Oh my God. They were so nice. And I am so fangirling out.
No, you're allowed. They're great. They're really great. It was so nice to talk about the career behind true crime like we do.
And I love that their journey is like they went from something totally different into podcasting, and they've had so much success with it. Like, that's so cool.
It really is cool. No, that was a great block and a great way to end it. So we can't thank those ladies enough.
Well, that does bring Podcaster Killed the Radio Star to a close. So, June, can I tell our next theme? Am I allowed to spoil
it? Big reveal. You can spoil. No, right. It's not. You're not spoiling it anymore. Now
oh,
it's time.
True, to- it's coming next.
If that's not it, you better let me in on what it is because we gotta start planning.
That's what we're gonna start doing. I'm gonna just tell everyone, surprise, including you, what we're doing. We, for June, we are going to be doing hot summer cold cases, which if you didn't figure it out, we're going to be covering cold cases. But that has been solved.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one of the reasons is because kicking off summer, and we have a really cool guest lined up. His name is Detective Kurt Mayle, and he works down at the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office down in Florida. He became a great friend after we did a Cold Case Files episode on the featured case that I'm going to be covering in that block, Tara Sidorovich. So that's a wild story that just aired not that long ago on Cold Case. And Kurt agreed to come on and kind of talk. We could talk about that, talk about his career, and just talk again about why cold cases. And I could not agree with him more. Like, if every department, that would be my wish. I don't wish that a case would be solved. I wish that every major city could have a cold case unit because there are so many forgotten victims.
So important. And just to get fresh eyes on things and fresh, like retest DNA, recompare DNA. You're absolutely right. It's so important.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, get excited for that. And if you have anything to say about cold cases or this episode where we talk to the girls from People Are the Worst, you can hit us up on our socials, Facebook, TikTok, Insta at Murder Unscripted. You can email us murderunscriptedpod@gmail.com, or you can hit up our website at www.murderunscriptedpod.com.
Yeah.
All right, well, until next week, be safe, be kind, and remember, perverts don't wear signs that say they're perverts.
Perverts are the worst.
They are the worst.
See what I did there?
That was good. But you guys, and especially Rebecca and Rachel, are the best.
You are the best. All right.
Bye.